10 things that congregations can do to help people in times of grief. And I'm going to give you a list of things that people have said that were very, very helpful. First thing we're going to talk about is the differences between anticipatory loss and sudden unanticipated loss. Do y'all have a main street here in Lebanon? Okay. Let me describe it this way. You're walking down Main Street, it's a beautiful day, and way off in the distance, you see a runner coming your direction. And you think, you know, I used to do that before I knew that it wasn't really wise for my knees to do so. And so you notice that they're sort of in the same lane that you're in. So as he gets closer to you, you're walking, he's running toward you, you move over. Well, he moves over, and he's still coming at you. And as it gets closer, you see, hey, he's still in my lane. So you move over again to get out of that lane. He moves over. He's getting closer and closer. You're trying to get out of the way. You're still walking. He's still running. And finally, he's 10 feet in front of you, and he's still in your lane, and you realize he's about to run over me. And he does. You're on the ground. You saw it coming, but you didn't expect it to happen like that. Your questions are, why? Did he not see me? Why did he do this? Am I hurt? All those questions. Now, let's change the story one way. You're still walking down Main Street, but this time, the runner comes from behind you. You don't hear him. You don't see him. But the next thing you know, you're plowed, stretched out on the ground. Same pain as before, but you've now got additional questions. Why did he do that? What happened? Am I hurt? Is he hurt? What was he thinking? Did somebody else see that? Is somebody going to be able to help me? I'm just laid out over the ground. Now, in an imperfect way, what we have tried to do is describe the difference between a loss that is expected, anticipated, versus a loss that you were not ready for. You see the difference? You see it coming. It's still painful. He runs into you. You see the loss coming. But at least intellectually, you saw it, that it was going to happen. With the other one, it knocked you over. You didn't see it. You didn't hear it. You didn't think it. You didn't know anything. And then still it happened. Well, what's the difference? The difference is this. Intellectually, maybe not emotionally, but intellectually, you realize that that person's getting worse. Doctors have said it's in the hands of God. If they're in the hospital, you can read the machines and see that the breathing's more shallow, hear what the doctors and nurses are saying. Again, there's the battle of the heart versus the head. The head intellectually understands they're not going to make it. The heart says there can be another pill, there can be another surgery, there can be another intervention. But at least intellectually, you're aware this person is not going to make it. That's anticipated loss. I was a police chaplain for some 5 to 6 years there in Lauderdale County, Alabama. And my job was, when they called me, to put my uniform on to go with a police officer to a home that I'd never been to before, knock on their door, and then in a matter of 10 minutes tell them information that would rock their world. That someone suddenly, unexpectedly, without anticipation in their family had died. One time it was a drowning. Another time it was a homicide. Another time, it was other things like that. In each case, they were not anticipated. You know, it'd be easy to say, they were here this morning. They were going to work this morning. You know, car wreck, all kinds of things. Here's what you need to know. Grief comes in one size extra large. The greatest loss is yours, whatever it is, or whatever they are. But there are differences between an anticipated loss and a sudden loss. A sudden unanticipated loss is going to take longer to work through, longer to process, and longer to work toward healing, because there's far more questions and not enough answers. Does that make sense? And so we just need to keep in mind. And then from a church's point of view, we need to think about when we're ministering to someone in the congregation or in the community, which loss did they have? And then deal with it accordingly, because someone with a sudden unanticipated loss, they're just barely getting by because this didn't happen. I told you last night about the family and the baby, and I can only imagine the processing that mother is and the family is going through, because the baby was in her arms, you know, for 6 weeks, and all of a sudden, one night, he's gone. And they've done an autopsy, and, you know, don't know the results of any of that. But needless to say, there's a whole lot there. Let's first of all look at anticipated loss. Dealing with anticipatory grief and loss is the one that we're looking at. And anticipatory means something is coming your direction. There is going to be grief. Ron gave the equation, love plus loss equals grief. And so when can it happen? Well, it can happen whenever the doctors determine that this is a chronic illness, that it's not going to go away, that is going to get worse, or that the person is terminal. Doctors sometimes give time frames. Sometimes they do not give time frames because they don't know everything. Sometimes, but in your situation, if you dealt with an anticipated loss, you probably know that, you know, they would do that. With my mother and the deal that she had with Alzheimer's, you know, they originally said 3 to 6 years. 6 years is about the median, the average for that kind of disease. With her, it's just 3.5 years. The Saturday before she died, the following Saturday morning in her sleep, she was at a family reunion in Huntsville, Alabama. But her heart began to act up, went in the hospital. Doctors determined the mitral valve was not working. At 89, she wasn't strong enough to endure a surgery. And so they just said, we're going to keep her comfortable. She stayed in the hospital until she passed away. With a lot of people, it would be a whole lot worse than that. But we knew that it was coming. Impending loss of a pet can cause that. Someone tells you that the dog is, you know, the animal is getting older, not beginning to eat. All those things. And Ron talked about the importance of that. Amputation, where something has to be taken off in order to live, can certainly cause that. Jail or prison sentence. I was in a grief class on one occasion at a place, and we were talking about anticipated loss. And a lady in the audience asked the question, what if the loss is in an upcoming period of time? And I said, ma'am, do you mind elaborating? And she went on to say, my relative, and she named who it was, is in jail, is in prison, and he's awaiting execution. And I think my mouth flew open because I'd never heard that one before. And so she was anticipating the death of this relative in a matter of time. Think about that one. That would be really tough, wouldn't it? And she was dealing with that. How could a new job bring on anticipatory grief and loss? What would the idea of a new job bring grief to you? I'm sorry?
Uncertainty.
The uncertainty. What do they expect from me? How's this going to work? What else? The loose, yeah. You know, that other the job was more than just a paycheck. It was social. They knew who I was. They loved me for who I was. Now I'm a nobody in a big company. And, you know, am I going to make it? Yeah, there can be anticipated loss even, and not referring to death, that can cause it. Retirement. You know, with retirement, you had status, you had position, you had friends, you were a somebody in that particular place. Now you're choosing, hopefully, rather than being forced, choosing to give all that up. But now what's it going to be like back home? I think we've talked about there have been some wives who, when their husbands came home from their job, went and found another job, or the other way around in some cases. But there is that anticipated part, or premature birth, in which the child, you know, is not going to make it, and all the things that go along with that. Look at the emotions that goes along with anticipatory grief and loss. People say, I don't know why I'm so irritable, but they start thinking about, you know, I don't know why this happened or how it happened, but I know it's coming, and all those things. Or denial. There's a really good book called by John Claypool, Tracks of a Fellow Struggler. And in that book, he talks about his daughter, age 7, that had leukemia for 18 months. And he made the point, let me just read it to you, because I thought it was pretty interesting. All this book is all about that journey that they had with his daughter and the hope and everything that would go better. But this is interesting. For 18 months, he's looking at the eventual death of his 9-year-old, 10-year-old daughter. But this is what he said. I did everything in my power to cope with her situation realistically. But at the feeling level, I had abounding hope. In fact, I did not realize just how hopeful I was until that Saturday afternoon as I knelt by her bed and saw her stop breathing. You may find this incredible, but I was the most shocked man in all the world at that moment. You see, deep down, I did not believe she was going to die. In spite of what my mind told me, I found myself clinging to the hope that any day a cure would be found, or that God would see fit to heal her miraculously. He was talking about an anticipated loss, but there was that hope against hope that everybody was wrong. And he said, until the very moment when she drew the last breath, so he was in denial, if you will, even 18 months of seeing after this. And you can see all kinds of other issues that go along with this. Sometimes, invariably, whenever there is that anticipated loss, you sometimes see people withdraw from the dying. Family members stop coming. They may come up with other reasons as to why they are not able to come. There may be, in some families, what is referred to as seagull relatives. A seagull is someone that flies in takes care of mama or daddy for about a week, changes all the routines, and then goes back to where they come from and leave you with the mess of cleaning everything up. It's not a very pleasant idea, but some of you might be able to give a name to a seagull relative in that regard. I see some of you looking at one another. And so, but that's what that's called. Well-meaning in some cases, but they invariably don't want to be around. I've seen that happen where I remember a funeral that somebody asked me to do, and the time was set, and it was going to be at this particular day, and then all of a sudden it changed 2 days later, and that, you know, I was able to work that out, but I did ask the question, okay, why was it on Tuesday and now it's Thursday? Well, so-and-so, and they named somebody from way out of state, wants to come, but they can't get here till then. And they've decided that the casket we chose for Mama is not good enough, and they want the most expensive one, and so they're going to have to go get that one. And it was just a really big issue. And there was that guilt that was going on. The loneliness, the loss of control over one's emotions. People who see the death coming often have that great range of emotions. On the second page that you've got there, you can see that sometimes anticipating that loss and trying to show your love and care and concern for them can lessen the pain in most cases. In other words, if family are around, if they get to tell people how much they love them, if they get to show their care and concern for them. Somebody this morning was talking about someone who died a day after someone came to them and told that loved one that was dying how important they were, how changed their lives were because of that. How wonderful when you can do that, when you get to be there and nurture that loved one to the very last breath. That's so, so helpful with anticipated loss. The difference in conventional grief versus anticipatory grief. Conventional grief is grieving backwards. A person dies and then you begin to grieve. With this loss, you grieve the past, the present, and the future. You know that they're not going to be here. They can't do the things that they used to do. They may not be able to talk about the things of the past. That's what we're talking about here. Even some folks, dying patients, 25% of them, experience this kind of loss, the roller coaster. They realize themselves, as they still have their minds, that they can't do the things that they used to do, and they may withdraw from society some because they're concerned about people seeing them in that condition. All those things go along with it. Those last words there on the second page is well worth thinking about. So many times with people anticipated loss, it's important to be able to say, if the need is there, please forgive me, or I forgive you, talking to the dying patient, or thank you, or I love you. That's the loss that you see coming. You may not accept it. You may hope that it's going to change, but you see it coming. Any questions or any comments before we then take a look at the sudden, unanticipated loss? Any questions or any comments? With that idea in mind, let's look at emotional reactions to sudden, unexpected loss. There's this belief. This can't be happening. That's what so many times people would say. I just saw them. No, we had to make sure that we had the names right, the place right. I always had an officer with me whenever we gave that information so that he could tell them what happened. I didn't want to do that. I didn't have that information, but he did. And so that was really, really important. But that was really, really hard. In West Alabama, every 5 to 10 days, someone is dying because of a car accident. That's probably pretty well true here too, this area. And so those terrible things happened. The capacity to cope is diminished. because you're just not ready for this. Like the person that gets hit from behind. You're walking, you're just, you know, walking down the street, and all of a sudden somebody runs you over and knocks you over. You're not ready for that. You're not ready for this. That's why it takes a lot longer to work through this kind of loss as opposed to the other. Your world has been shattered. Big difference between the way things were and now the way things are. Emotional reactions are heightened. It's normal for people to scream or holler or cry or just whatever, because there's some way of trying to get rid of this disbelief that this really has happened. And so you see that. There's always a need to assign responsibility. Especially this is true for men. Fathers want to know, why was my son killed in this car accident? Or why was... Sometimes we don't get the answers, but that's always important. And time perception is often distorted, and that's really important. If you're working with family members in a church that have lost someone through sudden, unexpected loss, time doesn't mean anything to them. So when you say, I'm going to be here tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning, you might have well said something completely different, because 8 o'clock doesn't mean anything to them. Right now, their world is in chaos. So understand that you need to work on their time frame. Rather than saying, I'm going to be here at 8 o'clock, you might want to say, would it be better for us to come early in the afternoon or late in the morning? Be generic. Because, again, time doesn't mean anything. Their time has stood still, if you know what I mean. Because they're still trying to process, this person was killed in this car accident, or this person was whatever. And that's important to keep in mind. The next page, factors complicating recovery and sudden loss. There's often, because of the sudden unexpected loss, the inability to say goodbye like you want to. I've had people write letters to their deceased after the funeral. If that's helpful to them, so be it. I once counseled a 10-year-old boy whose daddy chose to take his life, but he didn't know that. The boy didn't. He just knew he died suddenly. And he was dealing with that. And so I asked him, I said, what would you like to do? Would you like to write a letter to your dad? Yeah. I said, okay, write that letter. So the next week, he brought back the letter, and it was talking about all the good things they had done. They had gone to the fair shortly before this event had taken place, and he'd had a good time with his daddy. And I said, okay, what do you want to do with the letter? He said, I don't know. I said, do you want to bury it beside your dad, or do you want to keep it? He said, I want to think about that. The next week, he came back. He said, I'm going to keep the letter. But that was something he could do. It was a little closure on his part. Death is still there, but at least he had a part in it, because he didn't have a chance to have a part in that. And so that's really important, and that's really tough for people. Maybe the relationship wasn't the best when it happened. A lady in Boonville, Mississippi was concerned because she had had an argument with her daddy. He'd gone out the door. She had slammed the door behind the daddy. He went on to work. Later on that night, had a heart attack and died at work. She said, I caused it. I said, well, and we talked about that. And ultimately, he had had a long series of heart issues. So what they did didn't cause it. But she had to work through that, because that was the last thing that they saw, her saying something mean to her daddy. They worked through that. She had a great relationship. It just happened to be that little snippet, if you will. But that was tough. Secondary losses. Husband dies in a car accident. The wife stayed at home taking care of the children. Somebody's going to have to go to work. Somebody's going to have to see after the children. Somebody's going to have to pay the bills. Somebody's going to have to take care of the income tax. I knew one lady said her husband did it all, and he died very suddenly. And she said, I didn't know where to start, much less finish. Those are real issues. And children. Children in sudden, unanticipated loss don't understand the chaos that adults are dealing with. All they're seeing is adults whispering over here in the corner, and these folks showing all kinds of tears and emotions, and they don't understand why. And so they tend to go backwards. That's why they still need structure, even in sudden unanticipated loss. If they go to bed at 8:30, let them go to bed at 8:30. They may be acting out intentionally just to see if you care. And so keep the rules the same. But they may go back to bedwetting. They may go back to sucking their thumb because they don't have the mental capacity to understand why all this is happening. And so that's something to keep in mind for your children or grandchildren. And then sometimes trying to figure out the specific events leading to the death. Sometimes you're never going to find those things. Hopefully, the legal system, the law enforcement can help you with that. But just understand that there's more questions and less answers. Look at the complications of sudden loss. The complications of sudden loss. I believe you have that handle, that handout. It leaves you with the sense of unreality that lasts for a long time. What are some words that people in sudden unanticipated loss are going to feel because of the news that comes their way that one of their loved ones has just died all of a sudden? What words would denote how they're going to feel? Shock. What else?
Guilt.
Dazed. Surreal. One lady said, "I felt off-centered." Her husband had been killed as some men were trying to take away money they thought was at their home, but it wasn't. And they took his life. And so she, a Christian lady, said, "My life feels off-centered." So many other words, foggy, paralyzed, preoccupied. One lady said, "I'm just treading water." Well, those are the feelings that people that you know who have lost someone sudden and without anticipation are having to deal with. One fellow recently told me at our congregation, his wife died of a heart attack during the night in the bed. He wakes up, thinks she's just sleeping late. She's dead. Heart attack had taken her. Several months later was their anniversary. He was so aggravated because people were telling him on that date, "Happy anniversary." And he said, "It's not happy. My wife's dead." The very idea that they would wish me happy anniversary when she's not here. He was really having an issue with that particular situation. There's often a normal sense of guilt. The what if and if the onlys, the need to try to blame someone or something. There's that helplessness. All I'm trying to say is with sudden unanticipated loss, there are more questions and initially less answers. It's going to take longer to work through this kind of loss. And so from a church's point of view, we want to be mindful of those people and try to be there with them and for them as best we can, because we know that it's going to take a while to work with them. In the event that there is ever something like that happen, somebody needs to stay with that person or family, especially if it was a widow. That first 24 to 48 hours, let somebody be there with them to answer the phone, to process, to help ward off whatever needs to happen. Sadly, people prey upon folks with sudden unexpected loss. I don't know about y'all, but in our area, they'll put those signs out, the funeral signs, you know, in the area. That's a good thing. But sometimes people take advantage of that in a bad way. We had a situation there in Florence where a gospel preacher died, lived on a main thoroughfare of the city. On the day of his funeral, on the time of his funeral, folks were breaking into their house, stealing things. Terrible that society, somebody was preying on a sudden unanticipated loss of this gospel preacher by stealing things that were of value to them, the family, during the actual time of the funeral. And so those things can actually happen. Be sensitive to them in their time of shock and confusion. Offer to make phone calls, help with funeral arrangements, picking up guests, those type of things. Here's one thing that is important to say. With both of these losses, but especially this one, sudden unanticipated loss, don't tell them your grief story then. They've got enough to deal with. There may be a time for you to tell them your grief, but that's not the time to do it. Does that make sense? I've seen that. I've stood beside caskets of loved ones or of people in the church, and folks come up, and it's, I shouldn't say this, but I will. It's like they're trying to outdo the loss that has just happened by saying, well, I know I know this is sad, but let me tell you, and then they start telling, they don't need that. There is a time when you might tell that if there's some commonalities, but not at the casket or not in those first 48 hours. They just need your complete care and attention. Any questions or any comments about sudden, unanticipated loss? It's going to take longer, more questions, less answers, and therefore we try to be as careful and loving with those people as possible. Anything before we go to the last handout before we take a break? Now you've got one on the grief room, right? Grief room, do y'all have that one, everybody? No? Okay. FH, if you will get that one for me, then we will talk about where do we go when grief comes. Some of you do have it. Some of you do have it, but not everybody did get one. So if you did not get one, if you will raise your hand down front here. A grief room is not a literal place. A grief room is the way in which you grieve. But if your grief was like a grief room, a 8x10 or whatever, how big would your grief room be? That's what this concept is. How do I grieve? Do I grieve with an open door because I'm more than willing for anybody to come in and talk to me about my grief? Or do I have a door that has a handle on my side but not on their side because I'm a little cautious about letting people into my grief issues? There's not a right way. There's not a wrong way. There's just your way. How big would your room be? What is this, a 50 by 70? Would it be this big? Here's the idea. Men, women's grief rooms are typically bigger than men than women, men's. Why? Because we're a little bit more cautious about letting people into our grief. A little more standoffish about talk. We can talk politics, and we can talk about football, and we can talk about the weather, but you bring up grief real suddenly, and they're going to back off of that one because we don't typically, that's just who we are. But men have grief rooms as well. So if your grief was like a room, how big would it be? If your grief was like a room, what would you have in that grief room? What kind of door would you have? Would you have one of those old country swinging doors where just anybody can come in? Or would you have a steel bolted door, locks on your side, door handles on your side, but not on theirs? Would you have a peephole? There's not a right way. There's not a wrong way. It's your way. Understand that. In your grief room, what kind of chairs would you have? Right now you're thinking, well, I'd sure like to have a recliner. Yes, ma'am.
Sit in his chair.
You would sit in his chair. That brought you comfort. That's great. That's great. So hers was sitting in her husband's chair. That's interesting because there was a lady down in Orlando, Florida, and she told the story that her grief room consisted of her sewing room and the den where he would sit in his recliner and watch TV. And she said, I would sew in the sewing room, and it was real close so that I could talk to him, and he'd sit there and watch TV. But when he died, she said, I could no longer go to the sewing room because there was that void of where he had been and where I was. And so she said, I turned his living room into my sewing room, and his chair is still there. And I can sew, but I can also sit in that chair and have all those good memories. So thank you for sharing that with me. What kind of chairs would you have? Would there be chairs on both sides, on the outside as well as the inside? I want to leave you with some actual grief rooms that different people have drawn over the years. And I'm going to let you, if you choose to, after we break, come up here and I'll put them here on the table and let you look at them. Maybe that you might want to take a picture of something because you want to think about your own grief room. This particular lady said, my three places for me to grieve is the front porch swing, my van, and the ocean. And so she talked about that. This lady had a grief corner. When her husband died, they used to sit right behind us in church services. When her husband died, she had pictures of all their family and of his time in the armed services and his flag that was presented after his death. In Chattanooga, Tennessee, a former elder said, my grief room was the elder's office. He went on to say, after my wife died, those elders that I had worked with for years would allow me to come into that office, and I could talk to them, I could cry with them, I could pray with them, they would hug me, and that's where I grieved. Isn't that sweet that they had that kind of relationship? And so he said, the elder's office became my grief room, where I could go, even though no longer an elder, and be able to work with them. This lady, and you can look at all the different things that she said, but in the middle of her grief room was Mama's couch, and I've got that circled. This lady had her front porch and her brush arbor, and so she talked about that place that she would go outside to grieve. This lady was 25. She was an artist, and so she drew trees that were grief rooms to her. And she said, grief is a desolate field of dead trees yearning to learn to live again. And so she had trees that were named different things. This particular girl was 10 years of age. Her granddaddy and her, and maybe somebody else, was driving down the road when the granddaddy had a sudden heart attack driving the truck. She had to grab the wheel so that they wouldn't have a wreck. So it was very sudden, very unanticipated, and she had chairs in her grief room for her school friends. And this girl was very, very special. Katie was her name. This lady has in her grief room a telephone, and she has, I think, 15 friends that were a part of her grief room. And she said they were a phone call away. Again, we're not talking about a literal place, but if it was a place, what would it be like? This particular person, very smart, had three different places. My safe alone space, and he said he had black curtains on the window because that was where he stayed alone. My dining room, he has four chairs at that dining room where some friends could come. And then the sofa where they could just relax and enjoy things for a while. So he had three different spaces. This one was drawn by a family, sadly, whose son had taken his life. And they would come outside after supper, sit there with the door open in their garage, sit in chairs with the hope that family or friends would come to visit them. And they have a sad look on their face because so many times people would never come. They were willing to talk about their grief, but sadly there were a lot of people who would not come. And so That was their grief room. This one is sort of interesting because at the very beginning of it, it has a revolving door, which meant it was open to anybody, and that was really important. This lady had one recliner and one chair for her friends to be a part of. My point is, we all have a grief room. It may not be a literal place, but it's the way in which you grieve. There's nothing wrong with the way you draw it. You may not want to draw it. You may just want to think about it in your mind. But how do I grieve? If my grief were a room, how big would it be? What kind of door would I have? Would I have windows? Do I want to be reminded that there is light and life outside? Or would I want it to be all dark? Again, nothing wrong with how you draw it. It's just yours. This lady here drew hers outside. And so she's got windows, but then she hears the birds and sees the birds, and she's got one chair outside the door and one chair inside the door, and the Bible is there, and phones and Facebook friends were all there. This lady drew a huge telephone and had three friends. She said they're always a phone call away. And so that was interesting. Think about your grief room. Everybody's got one, and it's yours. And you can choose to do with it. It may evolve. It may just have a few chairs, but in time, one lady in here had a church pew. I thought that was neat. In other words, it's open to my church. They can all come in and sit because I love them, and that's the way it ought to be. Any questions or any comments about that idea? I'm going to leave these up here for you to take a look at if you'd like to, but I wanted to talk to you about that for just a moment. Any questions or any comments? Well, I did better than I thought we were going to do. It's 2:06, and I think if you're really quick, you can be home in 20 minutes, and there'll be a recliner waiting on you, or a bed as the case may be. Come back at 5 o'clock, if at all possible, as we talk about how to make it through the grief journey. And then at 6 o'clock, 10 things this congregation can do to help in grief. Thank you so much for your kind attention. You be careful.